When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Southampton have got four against two. They play it right here. They could win a place in the fourth round. Redmond, great stop by Rose off his line.
This week's guest is a man who spent his youth in his native Holland but has enjoyed his senior career here in England. He started with non-league Nuneaton Town and has made his way to the Championship, where he currently resides as Derby County's number one. Keller Roos, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoy being here.
No, we're delighted to have you on. I think we have to start with your journey. I mean, it's fascinating when you look into it and the fact that you spent your youth career at home in Holland. You had various trials before you made the grade in the UK, but was it always a dream of yours to come to England?
Yes, it was a dream for me from when I was a young boy, when I was around 14, and at the time I was in the PSV Academy. I started watching, obviously, Match of the Day and the Premier League games, and it was always a big aspiration for me to be in the big leagues. And in Holland, the Premier League is the big deal in that sense. So, yeah, from a pretty young age, I started to like English football, and obviously that was because of influence of the players that were playing at the time. Edwin van der Sar, obviously, as one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time from Holland. Robin van Persie, Arjen Robben, that type of all them players, Ruud van Nistelrooy, and that's why I started following it and I fell in love with it pretty quickly. But yeah, then I was still back at PSV and doing my academy football down there.
I think that's a really interesting point, because whilst people talk about the global phenomenon that is the Premier League and it's a marketable beast now across the world, people often tend to neglect the fact that actually the growth of the Premier League during that mid-90s period, that late 90s period when it really started to become big, has actually attracted players to England now. Like you said, you were looking at the likes of Edwin van der Sar. When you were sitting watching Match of the Day, were there any other goalkeepers that you looked at and thought, well, I really want to be like them?
I used to look at the big goalkeepers, and back then, obviously, David Seaman was a big one. I think Ben Foster was already around, Joe Hart. I liked many of them, but the ones I can remember, Petr Cech, I think it was a younger Schmeichel at that time. Shay Given was obviously around in the Premier League. It was many good goalkeepers. I remember Almunia. I remember Chesney as a young boy at Arsenal. And I felt like it was a very strong league with always amazing goals. And one of the things that attracted me probably most is the way in England they live football like no other country, I think. And as a goalkeeper, obviously, defending in England is highly rated, where in some other countries it's just a part of the game. It's all about the goals, really. Holland is a little bit like that. Sometimes I watch the Eredivisie highlights and a goalkeeper makes an unbelievable save from like a point-blank header or something, and the only thing that will be mentioned, it's funny sometimes because I only recognize that now, is that they wouldn't even say it was a great save. They would just say they should have scored it. And yeah, that's what really, for me in England, the special thing about football.
Yeah, well, something I'm keen to know. So you mentioned a few of your goalkeeping idols and people that you looked up to. Obviously, the type of goalkeeper you are, and I've been to watch you actually several times. In fact, the last time I watched you was back end of last season when you guys had a great win at Bristol City, a really important win that helped you obviously get towards the playoffs at the time. And the thing that stood out for me watching you play is you're very much the modern goalkeeper in that you're obviously good with your feet. You've got that tall, athletic frame. And I think when you're younger and you're looking at goalkeepers to follow, goalkeepers to be your idol, of course you'll be looking at the types of goalkeeper that maybe have a similar frame, have similar attributes to you. So was it the likes of a Van der Sar, for instance, who was also very tall, also very good with his feet? Was that the type of goalkeeper that you would look at, knowing that you could take attributes of their game because you do have a similar frame?
Yeah, 100%. It's because I think at the end of the day in life, not only in football, you're trying to relate to people that are a bit alike, because I remember really liking Casillas as well at Real Madrid, but obviously he played his game so different as I would ever be able to play it, if that makes sense. So if you have, for example, Hugo Lloris, I think he might automatically say I like the likes of Barthez and them type of goalkeepers that are like quick and smaller, but they're so agile. And obviously I'm a bit taller, and for that reason I looked up to, like, yeah, Van der Sar is the main one, and Stekelenburg at the time, he was at Ajax, and I remember following him very much, and that were the goalkeepers that definitely I was looking up to, more so because it was easier for me to mirror myself to them than to like a goalkeeper that's a different type of goalkeeper, to put it that way.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you say that, and actually it's a good one for our listeners, certainly the younger listeners that are listening in, and the two that you mentioned there, and actually Matt knows this, my co-host here knows that my email address as a kid was wannabebartez@msn.com. That was my email address for a long time. I love that guy.
Well, I don't know about that, Killer. I don't know if it's cool, mate.
It might not necessarily be cool, but you know, I love Barthez and I love Casillas, and the reason was, as a goalkeeper, look, I'm 6 foot on a good day, you know, maybe 5'11 most days, you know, it was one of them. So I'm obviously a little bit smaller, but for me it was agility. And I knew that as much as I admired a Peter Schmeichel or I admired some of these bigger goalkeepers, it's quite difficult for me to look at them and replicate their games. Yet somebody like a Barthez, Iker Casillas, I could take a lot from. Then what I ended up doing was doing kind of training that would work for me. So for me, it was a lot of power-based work, a lot of plyometrics. I do a lot of basketball drills, a lot of boxing drills to try and get that speed and movement. So I'm intrigued to know, for you, of course, with the frame that you've got and with the attributes that you've got, how do you train accordingly? Do you still do a lot of speed work, a lot of spring work? Do you work a lot on your distribution? Or do you tend to do what the goalkeeper coach gives you?
I work on a daily basis with Shay, and back in the day, I worked with Eric Steele, and obviously Eric Steele to me straight away when I came from Holland, where we are a bit lower in our stance and etc., which you still sometimes find in my game a little bit, where you can see where Alisson and, you know, Courtois and Amiele, their stance are a bit lower because they have been grown up like that, like I am a little bit. But I felt like what changed the game for me a lot was actually recognizing that that was not really for me. And for me, it's more about taking advantage of my height and be tall and be strong. But definitely, obviously, I think if you look at my career, you can see that I've had spells where I didn't play as much as I wanted. I was on the bench for a while at Derby. And these things, I think, are sometimes hard, but at the same time a great opportunity to completely break your game down and know what you need. And for me, that was definitely something when I was growing up. I was like, don't get me wrong, I was probably like 6 foot when I was 15, but I wasn't the quickest, I wasn't really agile, I was still struggling with dealing with my own height and my body weight and etc. So I had to really grow into my body, so it took me a bit longer than smaller goalkeepers that were quick and agile, and the reflexes were there when they were 15, where I had to really grow in my body. And that didn't really happen till I was, I think, 20, where I felt like, okay, now I'm going to get access to my power, I'm going to get quicker. And I've worked on that, obviously, relentless. But at the same time, I think I needed that time to kind of like be able to be movable like that. And now it flattens me a little bit. I'm quite proud that you said that you watched Bristol game and you think, looking at me now, that I'm like an agile, athletic goalkeeper, because that's something I've had to work for really hard. That didn't come natural to me. But what did come natural to me is being demanding and playing with my feet. And because I had the Dutch football school, where we used to train as an outfielder at least once a week with a different age group, because obviously I wasn't as good with my feet as the players in my own team, because when I was 16, I played on the 19s, but I would train with the under 17s. At least once a week as an outfielder, as a proper outfielder. So that could be centre-back, that could be midfielder. So that part of the game was pretty developed and it came natural to me. But I think it's very important that you realise and recognise what you need to improve and work relentless. And where you say that you had to do, like, you know, the boxing and the agility, and I do all that work, but at the same time, for me, it was very important. I do hot yoga twice a week, for example, and I feel like that's benefiting me a lot, because I wasn't too flexible a couple of years ago, and now I feel like I am, and I'm a lot more agile, and now I can block in the splits and that type of thing. And you just have to recognize which body type you are. You need to work on the bad parts hard, but you also need to go work on your good parts so they stay strong, and think that's a good mixture.
Do you know, that's such good advice. I need to touch on one thing there, because it's something I've started doing the last year or so, is hot yoga, and I do it once a week. It is so good, and I would recommend. Do you know what, the first day when I joined Blackburn Rovers, I always remember the first day, and I met Brad Friedel. I was understudy to Brad Friedel. He gave me a book, which was Real Men Do Yoga. That was the book, and he used to do it every single day after training. He'd go and do half an hour where he'd go through all the different poses, and I always watched him, and I never really got involved, because at the time I was young, I felt fine. It was only really when I got into my 30s, and I just wish that I'd done more of that before, because I had so many issues with my core body, and certainly like my shoulders, I had issues, my knees. But of course, the work you're doing in yoga, you're strengthening and you're balancing out a lot of the hard work you do. You mentioned that you do hot yoga now. How long have you been doing it? Is that something that you would advise for young goalkeepers?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think as an athlete nowadays, you see body types have changed over the years. And I think the most important thing to be as good as you want to be, like a goalkeeper is a pretty all-round sport. You don't really run a lot, but you still need to be able to sprint. You still need to be able to be quick on your feet. You need to be able to react quick. Your balance needs to be right, because when a shot comes, you need to be balanced. Your timing needs to be good. So there's so many assets as a goalkeeper you need, that I think getting as all-round as you can, with maybe even do, if you're like a younger goalkeeper, let's say between, I don't know, 10 or like 10 and 18 or 10 and 17, where you're still developing your body and growing and whatever, you're not really going to be able to lift heavy weights like adults are, but at the same time, you can do your flexibility, you can do your agility, you can do your speed work, you can play tennis for your feet work, you can play all sorts of sport. For example, I used to play tennis, volleyball, football till I was probably 15, which at that age I couldn't combine it anymore. I think some of these things give you so much advantage of being an all-round athlete. And as a goalkeeper, you do kind of like need it all. You need strength, you need power, but at the same time, you need to be quick and agile. So you can't be too heavy. You can't be too weightlifting heavy. You need to have a bit of everything. And I think it's so important for young goalkeepers to look yourself in the mirror and know what type you are and work on the things you need to do. But I have been doing hot yoga now for a good 3.5 years. Twice a week, and for me, I started doing normal yoga at first, and it was alright, but it was a bit unproductive. So with the hot yoga, what it does for me extra on top of normal yoga is, first and foremost, you are more stretchy when you're warm. That doesn't really apply for the fact when you get cold again, but at the same time, I wear my heart belt monitor, and I've got a watch on, and I did a hot yoga session, and I found out I was burning 800 calories in an hour session, which is incredible. And I thought, you know, this is a great combination for me to do cardio without running, and at the same time get flexible. And I think that's great. And then obviously it's good for your core, it's good for your balance, and all them things together, I think it's a great tool. And then you stay fit as well. You don't really get a start after games. Obviously, as a goalkeeper, I'm pretty powerful. I can kick a ball far. And I remember going out on loan, and I had to hit big Tom Elliott and Akeem Fenwa at Wimbledon. And I had to do that sometimes 30, 35 times on a Saturday. And I had to do it again on a Tuesday. And that's obviously pretty hard on your hip flexors and your back. So for me, that was an absolute game changer also for my endurance during games. So I wouldn't get as stiff afterwards, because I'm a lot more flexible now and my muscles can deal with it better now.
And I'm so glad you got into a bit of detail on that. I'm so glad you touched on doing lots of different sports, because I know with a lot of the young kids now that once they join an academy, essentially they give up everything and they just play football.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is an argument for that, that actually what makes a rounded goalkeeper, I was probably similar to you as a kid where I played all these different sports. And actually for me, basketball and boxing being two examples, when I got into my late teens, where basketball, you know, coming for crosses, that spring, speed of feet, power, you know, I actually downloaded a basketball program, which was essentially a lot of plyometric training. But the difference it made to me in terms of my power output was huge working on basketball training. Similarly, boxing training, it was speed. Of course, you're moving your hands very quickly and you're on your toes a lot of skipping work as well. So speed of feet, speed of hands, which again, slightly different to goalkeeping, but it stretches your comfort zone, which ultimately, I guess for you to become a better goalkeeper, it's always about stretching a comfort zone in different ways.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, as a goalkeeper, you need to handle the pressure. And I think if you want to be able to handle the pressure, you need to be able to get out of your comfort zone, because you can't just always stay on your line. You have to sometimes dive at people's feet, be offensive when the striker takes a big touch, and be brave and make the decision. And for me, for example, when I was 15, I had to stop playing tennis and volleyball and do other sports. I did start training six times a week in PSV Academy. But at the same time, I wish I never stopped it, because now I'm picking back up on it. Well, now, I think 4 years ago, I started playing tennis again. I started doing box classes again and the yoga.
At the other end, no, it's a wonderful stop from Rose. We have to stretch with everything to get to that.
Keller, I have to say that I think, just listening to you now and looking at your story and your career, that you will be quite an inspiration to a lot of people that listen to this show. We get a lot of emails in from young lads, but also guys in their 20s as well, who are desperately trying to make it in the game and are asking Rich in particular for advice on what they need to do next in order to get back into the pro game. And your story can really relate to this, because obviously, like we said, you started as a youth goalkeeper in Holland, where you were back home, and you had trials over here. You had trials at Bristol City, you had trials at Birmingham. Those didn't quite work out, so you had to go home, and then you eventually came back to England and went to non-league. You signed with Nuneaton Town, and it was only then that people started to recognise you. You had trials with Liverpool, I believe, with Everton, and it was only then that Derby eventually came in, after playing well at Nuneaton, that you finally got your big break.
Yeah, exactly. I was in Holland, and I got a little bit stuck in the system, which I think a lot of footballers will sometimes feel that way, even in England. But for me, it's a pretty long story, but to cut it short, when I was 15, I got scouted by Arsenal, by Liam Brady, and he asked me to come to Arsenal. And at that point, I felt like I was too young. My education wasn't where I wanted it to be, to leave Holland. And something in Holland that is a lot different to England, I think, is your education up till you're 18 is, you have to do it. It's a full-time education. You can't be, like training twice a day. And that's only around school time. So we would only train twice a day, an hour before school, then go to school from 9 to 3 and then go and train again. But it wouldn't never affect our hours. I think that's really important. But at the same time, I felt like when I was in my later 19s, 20s, I felt like the English game had opportunities for me, because I felt like I had to start playing games. Back then, even more than now, I was a game goalkeeper. I used to make my big reflex saves in a game. I was, on a young age, I was around 95 kg, and I'm like 93 kg now. And sometimes on a training day, you're doing a shooting session with, I don't know, 5 strikers, and they do like a good 50 to 60, 70 shots. And for me, with my body weight, I felt like my standards start dropping really hard, which is then hard to impress the coach that you're actually good at this, if that makes sense. But in a game, you will only have, I don't know, 5 shots where you are going to be fully powered up for every save you're going to make. So I felt like I need to play football games. As you said, I went on trial to Bristol and Birmingham, and yeah, Bristol offered me something, but that broke down for various reasons. And Birmingham, I felt like the coaching staff really liked me, but at that moment of time, they had their number one and then number two sorted for the year, and they had a young goalkeeper coming through, so they felt like there was not really space for me. And then I thought, you know what, the only way to get out of this system where clubs actually say we really like you, but you're not our main priority, is by showing them in games that I am a big prospect that should be at the big club. And obviously then I went to Nuneaton and everything went for me that well. I only played 10 games. I think I had 7 clean sheets in the first 7 games. And obviously that's not only got down to the goalkeeper, but it just worked out perfectly with the team. And then I went on trials to Liverpool, Ipswich, Bolton, Derby. And then I decided that Derby was the club for me to be with Steve McLaren and Eric Steele, which is obviously a massive, massive guru in the goalkeeper game. And that's how I had to get my break, to put it that way. And then I went to Derby, and then I started going on my loan spells and trying to fight myself into the first team.
Yeah, you mentioned Eric Steele there. We've had him on the podcast last season, and, you know, fantastic. I've known Eric. In fact, he coached me when I was in the under-21s for England, and he was brilliant. And do you know what? Even though I only did a week's worth of coaching with him, it really stuck with me. Even now, I remember how powerful I felt when I was working with him, because he was such a positive figure, you know, really energetic when he coached, had a lot of really good ideas. Was that a big reason as to why you joined Derby, the fact that you knew about Eric Steele and that he was such a good coach?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, he used to work with all the big goalkeepers probably England has seen. So he worked with Joe Hart, obviously with Van der Sar. He brought De Gea to Man United. All different goalkeepers as well, but one of his strengths, I think, and that's what I needed, is someone that relates to you as a goalkeeper. So he wouldn't coach me exactly the same as, for example, a smaller goalkeeper. He would treat me in a way where I felt like, okay, right, he can actually teach me how I should be a goalkeeper with my body type, instead of trying to change me into something that was not natural to me. And that was the first goalkeeper coach I experienced that with. And that was, for me, I think that was a game changer. And that's...
Well, Kelly, you signed for Derby in 2014, eventually, like you said, after all those trial periods. We often discuss loan spells with goalkeepers because it seems like the loan market is really utilised for goalkeepers in particular, especially emergency loans, which you had when you went to Plymouth Argyle most recently, of course, in 2017. But aside from Plymouth, Rotherham, AFC Wimbledon, Bristol Rovers, Port Vale, you've had quite a few loan spells. Some have gone better than others. AFC Wimbledon, of course, you played for them and got to the League One playoff final at Wembley, where they gained success. League Two playoff final, sorry. But you also had a spell at Rotherham that wasn't quite as successful. Your first loan spell, where you were there for the season, I believe, but it got cut short. What was that like for you mentally in trying to get back from that?
It was a pretty hard period for me. But it was one of those things. I went to Derby as a number three in January, when I just signed from the Neaton. I signed at the end of January, and the plan was that I was going to be a number three for half a season, get used to, you know, training with full-time pros and obviously with Eric Steele. And at the time, it was Lee Grant and Adam Leggings from Burnley. And I felt like I needed that step and developed myself really hard. Eric Steele did this thing with me, what he did with De Gea. He put, within 4 months, I think I put on 5 kg of muscles, and he actually started to really change me into what I am now. And then the year after, we had a bit of bad spell. I was a number two. I was on the bench for a whole year. Lee Grant got injured at the time, and they loaned in Jack Butland. He came to Derby, and instead of me getting into the team, we were fighting for playoffs, and the manager decided to loan Jack in, which was a setback. But at the same time, I was playing the cup games at the time, and I thought I'd done pretty well, but he wanted to choose experience. And obviously, that's a decision managers sometimes have to make. So I had to get my head around it and just trying to learn from the experience. And then at the end of the season, I was actually told that I was going to be the starting goalkeeper for the next season, and I was pretty excited. And 2 weeks later, the manager left Derby, he got sacked, and my whole situation changed, because a new manager came in that barely knew me, and obviously he's looking at the situation thinking I need some experience. Signed Scott Carson, and he's done incredible from the start, so that knocked me back a couple of spaces. And then I went on loan to Rotherham, which was something that was really new for me. I went into a team that was hanging on at the bottom of the championship, conceding a lot of goals. And when you lose every week, players start to naturally defend their own places instead of trying to work together to get good results, which is all natural. But it was all, that was all a bit new to me, because bear in mind, I came through PSV Academy, where we 9 out of 10 were the better team, and you just have to make them 1, 2, 3 big saves on big moments. And then I went to Nuneaton, and everything went well there. I got a lot of crosses, a lot of kicking, but still, saving-wise, there was only like maybe 4 to 5 shots a game, if that. And then I was thrown in the deep at Wimbledon, thinking that I was going to be able to cope with it. It was a really hard time. It was a completely different ball game, and I had to really dig in. And then I broke my hand, and then they had to get a new lone goalkeeper in. And I spoke with Derby, and Derby wanted to call me back. Yeah, what really has happened in opposite to what at that time came out that has happened is a bit different, but, you know, that's football at the same time. But I broke my hand. I needed operation, and Derby called me back for the treatment, and then to loan me out in January somewhere else. And that was a tough lesson. And then after that, I went to Wimbledon, and we end up in the same year winning the playoff final. And that's a complete different experience. But all them experiences, you need to take the good with the bad. Every goalkeeper makes mistakes. If you watch match day yesterday, goalkeeper mistakes. If you watch, there's penalties being given away. There's goalkeepers in the wrong position. There's things that go wrong. And that's part of the game. But as a goalkeeper, it's obviously always in the highlight of everybody's opinion, and you have to be able to deal with that. And I think all those loan spells have been great learning curves for me in that sense. So I feel like I've got a lot of baggage now to really believe in myself no matter what.
Keller, I've got another point on loan spells. So you've had around 5 loan spells in your career. They're obviously all for a short period of time. I've always wondered what it's like with regards to meeting new teammates instantly and having to know everyone's name. Is that an issue? Is it a difficult thing when you're sat in the changing room or you're there on the training ground for the first time? And we had Andrew Lonergan on the podcast, and he was saying how frustrated he got when he was alone at Rochdale and some of the players were shouting at him when he had the ball and just saying, "Keeper, keeper, pass the ball, keeper," because he was like, "No, learn my name." But for a goalkeeper who's constantly going on loan, having to learn people's names, have you got a technique that you use to try and remember people?
Yeah, I definitely have, because I have had a couple of loan spells where I come in on a Friday and play on a Saturday. I would do my homework. I would ask for the squad list, and then I would go on the website of the team, and I can see the pictures that I remembered from training. Obviously, or training, you see everyone. You do like a little set piece or 11v11 or something like that. And I would always make sure that I know at least all the names from the back 8 players. So let's say the back 4 and all the midfielders. And before I knew that, I would move on to strikers and then on to those players that are going to be on the bench. Yeah, so I always made sure that I knew all the names before the game, because I like to think that I am a goalkeeper that can bring leadership into the team. And I think some of my stats might show that as well, where I choose to be very vocal and, you know, make sure that defenders do what I want them to do. So play with a high line. So I'm willing to sweep. And you always have to get to understand that from each other. But I think the only way to get is across as soon as possible is clarity. And if you are just able to, from the first moment, to just, you know, really put your foot down and say what you want them to do, and you back that up, then they're pretty quickly going to find out, okay, cool, this is the goalkeeper we're working with now. And
well, Keller, obviously you signed for Derby in 2014. Eventually, I mean, you'd played in cup competitions, but you made your debut as recent as last season in January. So it was yourself and Scott Carson vying for that number one, and Frank Lampard came out and said he had a conveniently difficult decision, I guess, to make. You ended up getting that spot. What was that like for you, finally breaking into the side?
It was obviously a milestone for me, because while I was doing my loans, I extended my contract with Derby, I think, once, where I was thinking, is this the right thing to do, or do I need to, you know, play games again once, like I did at Nuneaton, where I just threw myself in the deep. I went to this small side in the Conference National, where people were looking at me and actually saying to me at the time, "Well, bro, you played PSV Academy all year, you've been a Dutch international, now you're going to Nuneaton, do you actually think you're going to make it?" And then kind of things like keep you on your toes, and at the same time it shows you that sometimes people will lose belief. And I stuck around, I had to grind it out. And at the same time, like I said, I think I've always been able to be really honest with myself in what I need to improve in my game. I'm very like analytic from nature, so I will always break my game down and see what there's out there to do. And I would always make sure that even though I was not always playing, because before I made my official debut in the championship, I've probably been on the bench in the championship 50 times without coming on. Looking at the other side of the bench, where probably 3-4 times already the other goalkeeper came on by injury or red cards or that type of thing. And I always had to sit there and think, when am I going to get my chance? I've set it for 50 games now. But at the same time, I used that time to work on my left foot, on my distribution. So by the time the chance is coming, that you have done every single thing you could to kind of like take that chance. And for me, that chance came last year in a couple of cup games, and we had a little bit of a bad spell of a couple of rough results with the team. And that's sometimes then the luck you needed. And I'm not going to lie, at some point it felt like I might not get the luck. I might need to go to League One and start showing people again. But luckily a chance came, and when the manager Lampard came through the door at Derby, I felt straight away like, this is my year. I'm going to break in the team. I know what type of football he wants to play, and I can really flourish in that. And that's what I did, and I stuck to that. And I was personally never told that, okay, right, you are the number one now. But I just felt myself staying in the team more than anything after Scott came back from an injury. I was just very proud of myself that a big goalkeeper like him, that's been very big for Derby the last couple of years, that I could challenge him.
Well, it's a big compliment to both you and him, the fact that he's obviously moved on to Man City now to be on their books for the season, of course. And as you say, the career that he's had, hopefully we'll have him on the podcast soon. Actually, he said that he will come on, so we'll look forward to that, because you're right, he is a big, big character. But that's huge credit to you, the fact that you did get in, you established yourself. Now, we spoke a lot on this podcast, and we speak every podcast about the challenges that goalkeepers have, the highs, the lows. You know, I've certainly spoke about my highs and lows in my career. One of the biggest lows I had was a mistake that I made, which took me a long time to get back from in a big game in particular, Watford. Then I know last season obviously it went brilliantly. I mean, I saw you the game against Bristol City, where you were fantastic that day, and you guys came from, I say nowhere, you're always there or thereabouts, but you did steal that last playoff place, which was a huge achievement for the club, a huge achievement for you personally, for Frank Lampard. You then made the playoff final, and then the playoff final itself, of course, you went down to Villa. How was that to deal with, the playoff final day, when it didn't go your way?
It was a very tough day. Obviously, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to make it nice than it was. It was, obviously, Villa crossed the ball. It was 1-0 at the time, and I felt really, really sharp the last week before that, playing against Leeds, Bristol, like you said. And I was really on top of my game. And they crossed the ball, and it was an awkward little deflection that took it high up in the air. And I chose to try and catch like a weirdly floating ball. And I didn't manage to do that. And then at that moment, you have to, in a split second, make a decision. And that might sometimes be the wrong one. And for me, one really big thing that I obviously learned from that is that the only way you're going to get over those things is knowing that you have done every single thing that you can to be as good as you can on that day. And I took a lot of that away with me, where I thought, you know what, I am 100% sure. And at that point, everything has been said, and I should apologize to this and to that. And I thought, you know what, no, I am not apologizing to no one, because at the same time, I know that I have done every single thing that was within my power to be as good as I could at that moment of time. And I still made the mistake, and that's how football sometimes works. It's a rough game where not everything goes your way, and as a goalkeeper, you're going to concede goals, you're going to concede ugly goals, you're going to concede deflections. There's going to be a mistake every now and again. Once again, look at your big examples. Van der Sar didn't used to save any penalties up till his last maybe 3 years of his career, where he then won the Champions League, and I think it was the FA Cup, all on penalties. And what you need to do is you need to look at your idols and think, okay, right, what did they do? Lloris had a little spell last season, and it happens to every goalkeeper. David De Gea, towards the last end of the season, and all of a sudden you hear people say, oh, is he good enough for Manchester United? Well, a week before, they were only talking like, hopefully we can keep him and he's not going to Real Madrid. And that's how football is. And you just need to kind of like channel that out. And this is who I was. I give him my all. I'm sure that my players around me and my coaching staff knew that I was doing everything I could to be as good as I could, and it wasn't to be that day. And that's painful, but for me, there's no more baggage than that.
Oh, and it's going to go in! It's going to go in from John McGinn, and Villa in complete command.
He looks like the opportunity has gone. Once this shot is deflected, they should be dealing with this. The keeper should be dealing with this. He's trying to let the ball drop into his arms. He's got to be punching this clear. He's got to appreciate that he's going to get closed down. McGinn's going to try and get to the ball first. So as a keeper, you've got to clear everybody out. Don't try and catch it. Punch it clear. That's a horrendous error. They shouldn't be scoring from this position, Aston Villa. But at 2-0, it's a long, long way back now for Derby.
Keller, refreshingly honest there. Thoroughly enjoy that answer. And that's the beauty of goalkeeping, is when you do stand up, obviously, to things that have happened in games, and you move on and you learn from that, which you've obviously done. Now, before we let you go, I just wanted to touch on future hopes and dreams, and in particular, Holland. I mean, Jasper Cillessen at the moment is the overriding number one for his country. Mm-hmm. But you could argue the number two, the number three, the next Jasper Cillessen, the next Holland number one, is potentially up for grabs. You're just 27 at the moment. Is that something that you're thinking about?
It's not something I'm thinking about on a daily basis, but something why I look at as a big dream and a big goal to be a Dutch international. And I hope one day I'm get the call, but for now I'm just focusing on being as good as I can for Derby, and where that takes me, that's like something else. I like to live my life in things I can affect, and things like that I can't affect. So I'm just focused on me as a goalkeeper, and working every day with Shea and the other goalkeepers to be as good as I can, and where that takes me, yeah, we will see.
Great stuff. Control the controllables. Right, last but not least, and we always ask every goalkeeper this at the end of the Goalkeepers Union podcast, slightly different for you because also you are still playing and there's still so much of your career, but the question is, what has goalkeeping given you, and what will you hope that goalkeeping will continue to give you?
Goalkeeping has definitely given me a dream, which is, I think, is very big for goalkeepers in any age. You're allowed to dream, you're allowed to go after your goals, and the sky is the limit, and you just have to keep fighting for what you want. And it definitely has helped that I can call a hobby. And I would hope it would give me a lot more game times for big clubs, and hopefully one day in the Premier League and in the Dutch national team.
Kelleroos, top stuff. Boss, thank you very much for joining us. Plenty to go over there, Rich. Kelleroos, some really good advice. I think it took him a while to accept that he wasn't the highest, he wasn't the strongest, he wasn't the most agile, and he adapted his training to focus on that. All those marginal gains, the heart rate monitor story, where he said he realised he was only running a certain time, where he was burning a certain amount of fat, so he thought, right, that's something new that I could do. And the fact that even at one point he was like, yeah, I realised I was 95 kg then, and now I'm 93 kg, like those really small margins.
For me, I think one of the biggest things, and this is, again, it can be applied to everyone, is the concept of just keep moving forwards. Regardless of what's happening, just keep moving forwards. What's the next thing? What's the next thing you can do to improve your game? And you can tell from speaking to him that he does. He focuses on the detail. So that might be the hot yoga that he's done for the last 3.5 years. It might be something a little bit different, a different sport that you might play in order to give himself the best chance and just to improve him in some area, because he has had some setbacks. He was very honest about that, honest about the playoff final in particular, which I know from a personal experience, when I had an issue in the playoffs against Hull and made a mistake, it took me a long time to come back from that, mentally more than anything, because I did feel guilty. I felt like I'd cost my team. Yet I've seen him come back this season. He's come back stronger than ever, looks very, very good. And similarly, when he's had setbacks before and maybe made mistakes before, he's shown that he keeps coming back and he keeps moving forward, keep finding the next thing. And no, I love speaking to him. It's that, you said it, it's a real refreshing honesty that he was talking with, and a real positive outlook.
Definitely. And I know that I use the word inspiration, and some people might say, oh, it's a bit dramatic saying that Kelleroos is an inspiration. But I genuinely believe that he can be for goalkeepers, especially those listening to this, because he turned down Arsenal at 15. that was real perspective from him. And I know they have a system in Holland, and he adhered to that and thought, well, you know, it's probably not the right time for me to do that. He had those trials at Bristol City and Birmingham. It didn't work out. He had to go back to Holland. But he had this dream, like he said, of watching Match of the Day in the 90s, of playing in the Premier League, and decided to come here and go into non-league. It was a Skrill Premier at the time, so a very low tier of our football pyramid. But he went there, showed what he can do, and then he got noticed.
Yeah, look, and even at Nuneaton, I think he was at Nuneaton, I want to say he was 20-21, so it wasn't like he was a kid playing at Nuneaton. You know, a lot of the times, once you get to 21-22, people would almost consider that then that's the level you're going to be at, and it's going to be tough for you to get above that level. I got a bit of stick the other day. Someone asked me about what they should do in terms of when they're going into like their apprenticeship. Like, should they keep their options open? Should they be focusing on maybe doing a course alongside? And my advice was, if you've got a dream, give everything to that dream. As long as, if that dream doesn't work out, that you don't then crumble and fall and fail, because there'll always be something else you can move on to. And the reason I gave that advice is I think if you want to become brilliant at something, you put your heart and soul into that. Which, listen to Keller Roos, he's done that. He's come to Nuneaton, he's got this dream. He's going to make it in the Football League. He's got his opportunity at Derby, had a couple of loans. Some didn't work out, some did. But he's so committed to that dream, and there's no other possibility in his mind. Now, had it not have worked out, and had it have been that he'd had to go into another profession, my advice to him at that point would have been, go into that other profession and give that absolutely everything at all. But you don't necessarily need to consider it until that moment happens. Now, I've got no doubt I'll have a few parents shouting at me saying, no, my kid needs to do their schoolwork as well as focusing on their football. I get that. Look, the percentage that actually make it as footballers is very, very small. But the counter argument will always be that if you give your heart and soul, you give 100% to something, you're going to have more of a chance at maximising your potential. Now, what your potential is, whether that means you can get yourself to the Premier League, or whether it means you're going to get yourself to the Conference South, or maybe just a good amateur player, who knows? But if you're able to give everything, the one thing you'll never have is a regret that you didn't give it everything. And there is always a second opportunity, even if it means you go into another line of work and it ends up meaning that you're several years behind your peers. It's okay, because you can give that everything as well. There's no time frame on this kind of thing. However, when it does come to football, there is a time frame, because of course the older you get, the more difficult it becomes. And that's why listening to Keller Roos, his story is inspirational, because he made the move over here. He was Nuneaton at the age of 20-21. He only got into the pro game at the age of 22. Only made his Derby debut at the age of 26, I think it was, from
his league debut, yeah.
League debut. I mean, look, that's a story for you. He may well end up playing in the Premier League. He may well end up playing for his national team. Similar to Jaden Merritt, for any Watford fans out there. He's playing for Northwood at the age of 21. And again, before you know it, he's playing in the World Cup finals. I mean, that's just, again, another inspirational story where there's not just one route of making it. Yes, some get scouted at the age of 9 or age of 8. I heard of one the other day, a kid that got bought at the age of 8. Yeah, that happens, and maybe there's a slightly different path. But at the same time, for every one of those that are out there, there's also a Keller Roos out there.
Yeah, absolutely there is. And a 3-year deal now he's signed with Derby there until 2022. And I know I brought up Holland, but I do think he has got an opportunity there. Jasper Cillessen is 30. He'll probably go on for a few years. But if Derby do get promoted and Keller Roos is a Premier League goalkeeper who's playing well in the Premier League, he's got every chance, especially with the fact that Philip Cocu now is the manager at Derby, a fellow Dutchman who will know Ronald Koeman very well. He's got an opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, again, we can give other examples. Nick Pope is a great example where he's in and around the England team now, and it wasn't so long ago that he's playing for, was it Bury Town or wherever it was in non-league. And similarly, Keller Roos, his rise now, the fact that he's playing regularly in the Championship for a top Championship club, firmly established as number one, a team that could well get promoted this season. He's going to be in and around it very, very soon. For him, it is now a period of consistency that he needs. If he can continue to be Derby number one this season, next season, then I'll be shocked if a call-up doesn't come within the next 18 months or so, certainly.
Okay, well, that's it for another week, Richard.
Fantastic.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon, in association with Goalkeepers 365, and in association with Love Sport Radio. We'll be back next week.